Welcome to the GTC podcast.
Do a notification or something anyway before it does it, or change a little bit, but we'll see.
Yeah, Roger, that's got it. See, it says you're recording.
Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Hello, mate. Have you frozen? Nope, you're back in. Welcome, everybody, to the GTC podcast. You've had your generic intro, so this is me now live with our guest. And our guest today is Stu from Lakota Outdoors. Now, I could quickly big you up and give you a description about yourself and how you were a smelly Matlow for a little while and explain what Lakota Outdoors does. But to be honest, it's a very interesting concept, and I don't think I would do it justice if I tried to describe it. So I'll hand straight over to you, Stu. First of all, thank you for coming on, but introduce yourself and introduce Lakota Outdoors first, please.
Yeah, well, thanks, PJ. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. I know, you know, you Marines don't like to hang out with us Matlows, so I feel very honoured. So Lakota Outdoors, it's kind of evolved since I started. I think we started around the same year, just before COVID is when I launched it. And I wanted at the time to do something to, well, there's multiple reasons I started it, but one of them was I wanted to get back out into the outdoors, because I think like being in the, and we'll go into this later, but I think being in the outdoors is as much as you can is vital for your own mental health. And I thought I'd try, why don't I do some merch with it, like a clothing brand? But I've had a load of issues, ongoing stuff with suppliers, and I've been let down, and we did like print on demand, which was really expensive. And then obviously with COVID, people waiting 2 months to get a t-shirt. And it kind of, after a while, I was like, I'm not in it to sell, like that wasn't my driving force to be like a clothing brand. And it was having, so obviously we've got a good group of guys, and that's more for like to meet up, go on trips. You know, we've all met, some of them I know before it, some of them we've met through Instagram and all friends of friends. And it wasn't until I brought Eddie in, who lives 10 minutes down the road from me, so his daughter's in the same class as my son, and he, you should probably get Eddie on this at some point, because his dad was a bootneck. He's a ex-stuntman. He does a lot of, I don't want to say too much because I don't know what I can say about it, but he does a lot of adverts. So he's like a movement coordinator. So he works with like top footballers, brands. Like, honestly, he's got some, he's worked on like mental Marvel films doing stunts. Like, he's got some stories. He'd be great to go. Anyway, so I met him through obviously the school and the new school that my son went to, and you know, me and my wife kind of got introduced to people. And anyway, so was it it was prior to New Year's Eve, where they're basically locking at one of their houses, and I showed him a coat, and he was like, oh, and he's like, I'd love to get more into the outdoors. So I brought him in on it, and then we went away to we've done like Wales a couple times later, and after the first trip driving back with him, and he was like, why don't you like work with other brands? Because he said, what is the goal of Kurt? And I was like, I don't really want to sell much. I haven't done it for ages. I'm kind of like thinking of this and that. And I was like, I want to work with brands, but I said, I don't know in what context or what capacity. And he's like, you should just do what you do, get content and work with brands. And that was like the penny had dropped. And I was like, that is what we should do. Because that's what we enjoy doing. But the whole point is we enjoy going out, but we like photography, we like filming, we like putting content out there on the gram. So it's like, well, and again, like with yourself, PJ, it kind of fits in, doesn't it? It's like we like doing that. There's brands like yourselves that can't always get away, can't always get that content. It's like, let us do it for you. And so that's what we're doing. We've got some really cool projects that I can't talk about, but we've got some stuff where we're hiring in like other third parties, like director of photography, a sound guy, a few other things. We're doing some media and an advertising campaign for another brand that's launching a project, which I can't talk about at the minute, but that's going to be like next level production, like professional, and obviously we'll be charging. So that's the goal, is to build up the brand enough where we can work with the bigger brands and then we can charge them, but we're still undercut what a professional production company will do, because they would charge a lot of money to go out to these places where we're kind of there. So it's like, you know, that's where I think our market is. We'll be able to be cheaper than what a big production company will be. So it's kind of evolved. So yeah, it started off as, and still I want to promote that kind of well-being of going out in the outdoors, of course, but it's kind of now evolved into its own thing. And, you know, I started it, then I brought Andrew on as our first ambassador. I've known Andrew for a few years now. We did a charity event together.
Yeah, for people that don't know, Andrew is, I'm going to mess this up, but it's Valley Low, Mountain High. Is that right?
That will be it from now on. That'll be it from now on.
Or is it Valley High?
Valley Deep, Mountain High.
There we go. Valley Deep, Mountain High.
It's all right, that's the one. It's all right, you're a bootneck. We'll let you off, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't written it down in crayon, so I'm not sure. And also, I'm about three quarters of the way through a bottle of wine. So.
Yeah, it is. So Valley Deep, Mountain High, Andrew or Ish. So top bloke. He's obviously, you've seen his page. He's been doing the outdoors since he was like 4 years old.
We shouted his page out, but Eddie's is like Eddie Playmaker.
There you go. We've
covered both bases so far. But there's a lot more team members that we'll cover like that. Go on.
Yeah, so I brought Andrew in pretty early on. So he's kind of like my right-hand man, my go-to. And then with Eddie, it's like the three of us now. And even though I'm like the captain of the ship, it's still a team effort. So they'll suggest things and I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea, we'll do that. And so it really is a team effort. It's not just me going, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. It's we all pile in the ideas. And which is great because we work really well as the three of us.
Yeah, awesome. So it sort of has developed, and I know that very well, you know, with Gibraltar Trading Company itself, you know, it started off as one thing, and the podcast and even the actual company started off separately, and you know, it evolves into what it businesses make themselves what they want to be, essentially, in a weird way.
Yeah.
So I get that. So essentially it's now a team of content creators.
Yeah. Is probably the best way to put it. It's kind of like, so the page now is for like content creation, production, whatever you want to call it. And that's the core of us. That's me, Eddie and Andrew. But then we have like the broader team that have been part of it for 1-2 years. So we've got a group chat and we always just put, hey guys, we're going here on this date. Obviously it's mainly just full of banter, but every now and then we'll say, hey, we've got a trip coming up, and then it's whoever's available will come out, and that's just purely like, let's do something cool. But then we've kind of like, it's an expand, so we've got like Jake, who's the bearded shooter. There's a kind of like a core group that every time I say, or Andrew said, hey, should we go somewhere, there's a core group, you know, you'll find it, there's always that core group that always go away. So Jake's in with that. Sam, who's Trelaw Photography,
he's really good. Yeah, as well,
really good. He's just super busy at me, but he normally always comes away with us. And now Chris has been joining us, so that's Harry Fredders.
Familiar with him
just
as well.
Power, that just he's just an angry, grumpy old man, but we love him. So we've got this good group that we always just, you know, and it's just first and foremost, like if they're on the WhatsApp group, that's just, it's just mates, you know, that is the Lakota team, but that is just mates meeting up, having fun. But then you have your core inner group that kind of are available to go out and do trips. And then there's just me, Eddie and Andrew that then spearhead that content part of it. So that's kind of where we are at the minute.
Yes, it's always difficult to quantify. People ask about Gibraltar Trading Company every now and again, and they sort of say, you know, oh, how many people are you? And it's like, well, technically 1 and 100. What do you want me to say? you know, and the way I always describe it to people is circles. You know, we've got the inner circle where we've got myself, a few other people around the HQ. Some are further abreast from the HQ, but yeah, do some remotely stuff. Then we've got the distributors, the digital marketer, things like that. Then on the outside of that, we've got content creators that we work with, like yourselves. We've got a few others as well. Then the biggest circle is everyone that's part, that has ever bought a product, liked a photo, yeah, shared anything, played Friday Quezzies, you know. So that's the way I think is the best way to describe Locator Outdoors in that sense, is that it's got the rings, hasn't it? Everyone's a definitely part of the team. It's just when what? And just because you're in the inner circle doesn't mean you're better than the outer circle. Just no, that's your job. That's what you're doing.
No, and when I did like the rebranding, because I was like, the coat's going in a different direction. So that's when we did the rebranding, and that's when it was kind of like more known that it's me, Andrew and Eddie, purely because if I go, oh, there's say 10 of us, like, it's too much. Not everyone's a photographer. And then you go to a brand like yourselves that's a, you know, a smaller up and coming brand. Oh, you need to give us like 10 lots of kit. Like, that's a hell of an expense. So it's, you know, I think as we grow, obviously it will grow, and there'll be people on the team that will be asked to kind of come in more on that content side. And like Jake started to kind of, you know, he brought his camera on last weekend. And he's got some stuff. So, you know, as we grow and we need people, we'll fill that in. But I just didn't want to start with loads of people. You know, I think you need to start small and grow it, basically. I mean, three is still quite a lot at the, not for us, but you know what I mean? If you're approaching smaller brands to say, hey, you need to kit us out three lots of this or whatever. But I think once we're getting bigger brands that can afford to pay us and do all that, then we obviously would bring people as and when we need. So there's all that, there's always scope for growth, you know, and that's the aim.
100%. And like where we are as a brand, obviously we're sort of speaking as if everyone knows. So if you probably would have seen, if you follow either GTC or Locator Outdoors, like we're working together at the moment and we're starting to do some different projects, and we've got a lot more in the pipeline. But three is pretty much at our sort of limit at the moment. However, week by week, that's increasing, which is incredible. But yeah, it worked out really well for us to start with. And we had the discussion that we want to expand that part of our business as soon as possible and put things into it. And Locator is definitely going to be up there with one of the few different content creators we're using to do that. So as difficult as that is, we've sort of got to the core of what Locator is. So let's delve into Stu then. Let's give us a little bit of a background about yourself and about being a hoofing bootneck, almost gave you a promotion, a hoofing matlow that never actually went on ship.
Five days.
I've got the end, don't you worry.
You've been doing your research, mate. Well, I grew up in Cornwall. So I grew up in Cornwall on the sea, in a town called Loo.
I'll pause you there. Jam first or cream first?
Jam.
You're wrong. You're just wrong.
I don't like cream. I don't like cream. I don't like cheese. And that's, and people can't get their head around that, but I'll eat pizza. But that's a different conversation. That is,
we'll park that one. We'll have to park that.
Okay. Traditionally, you put cream, then you jam on. Yeah. And the crimp's got to be on the side, not over the top as well.
My Lord, look at this.
Come on. So grew up in Cornwall, and I just spent my time skateboarding, surfing, and I call it snorkeling, but people call it freediving now. That's all I did as a kid, up to my teens. And I was always going to join forces. I was always into that, you know, I wasn't really into school that much. I've always been interested in the forces, like, but it's weird. It's not one thing. Like, I don't know if you always grew up and wanted to be a Marine or something like that. Like, I wanted to be a pilot. Like, that was my thing. Like, I don't know if you're old enough, but there used to be a magazine called Takeoff, and I used to get that. This was going back, this has been in the 90s. I used to love jets. Like I used to love World War II planes. I had all the Airfix World War II planes. Like as a kid, I used to make them with my dad. So I want to be a pilot. And I remember I went to like a careers day at my secondary school. And obviously I'm an idiot. So I went to the RAF and I'm like, yeah, I want to be a pilot. And he's like, cool, what are your grades? And I was like, C's. And he was just like, ain't happening, lad. And anyway, I went to college. I knew I was going to join something. I went to college and then I kind of looked at the army and the navy and I sent off for information pack for the army. It never turned up. And I still to this day think my mum binned off because she didn't want me going in the army. And then I literally just went down the careers. And my dad said, whatever you go into, get a trade. So I'm like, I'm going to try a navy. Like, I've got a mate who's joining up. I'm stone's throw away from Plymouth. I grew up with looking at the ships out in the bay. So it's like I used to go to the Navy days down in Devonport. Like, so I didn't realize it at the time, but growing up with all that, seeing that just kind of influenced you. So I went to Navy careers and I was just like, and they're like, what? And I wanted to join as a TIF, right? So it was like artificer. So it's, you have to do some extra exams and you go into engineering, but you basically get a fast track promotion. So I went in there and I was like, yeah, I think I want to become an artificer. And they're like, we've literally been that off. Like we're not, literally we've taken the last amount in now. Like we've been that off, we got rid of it. And they're like, what are you interested in?
Yeah, for people that don't know, including myself, what is an artificer?
So we used to call them TIF. So
that literally sounds like someone with a speech impediment is trying to say.
Yeah. So we call them TIF. So basically, you're not an officer. You're a normal rate. But whereas you'd go in and you do, I don't know, maybe like 4 years and you might get picked up on the signal for promotion. If you're a TIF, like your whole career up to like probably like chief, I think, is mapped out. So it's like, right. You get promoted really fast, but it's a harder course. But they got rid of it. They just said, don't need it. So they were like, I said, I like aircraft. And they were like, well, so it used to be called an AEM, aircraft, air engineering mechanic. And then they changed it to air engineering technician. It's the same job, but because where the TIF, they got rid of the TIF, they kind of changed the role. And they were like, you still have to do the entrance exams to be an artificer and you can become this AET and you might get a fast track promotion. And obviously because I didn't have a degree. I was an officer material. I was never going to be a pilot. I was like, for me, that's the next best thing. My dad said, get a trade. I was like, get to work on aircraft. Pretty cool. And somehow passed, like they had this extra maths exam. And I somehow passed it, which don't know how I to this day don't know how I passed it. Like the basic ones are really easy, but like that maths one I was like, because it was proper hard. But yeah, passed that. Obviously went into to rally, did all the basic training. Naturally I won best recruit out of 60, as you do,
of course. You know, big fish small pond, and
that's
all that,
it, mate. They looked at me and went, he's a fucking winner. And then I went, did all my trade training, and that's when you could like put in a draft, and it's like kind of basically what squadron. So, but you look at it because you don't know what squadron, you look at the aircraft type, and someone comes in and go, right, you can go Merlin, which is quite a new aircraft, and that's a Pinger and it looks for submarines. Okay, you could go Harrier, and I was like, don't know, that's kind of cool, but helicopters, you get to go in them. So I was like, I want to do that. And then they said, oh, and you could go CHF. And work on the Mark IV, the CHF Commander Helicopter Force. And I looked at it and it was like, you get to do you get to wear, you know, the combats, you get to do all the boy soldiering, and you look after the aircraft in the field. And one of the instructors we had, he was ex-CHF and he'd done like Bosnia, and he just sold it to me. And I was like, that sounds cool. And that's what I put in for. And luckily got it. It was just everyone in our class picked the right amount. Yeah, and so I did that. So fast forward, so went, joined CHF, did all my training, did all the extra like soldier training, which is just easy stuff, you know, like stuff we don't get taught, but you do, is probably day one as a bootneck, you know, putting up a bash of patrol. It was basically patrolling, how to fight and survive in the field, but the basic stuff. But I loved it. It was really cool, cool little course. And then, then did two tours of Iraq, one tour of Afghanistan with 845 Squadron. That was back. So my first tour was end of 2006. So did Iraq twice that year. And then, yeah, did Afghan in 08. And then came out, basically. Yeah.
I can imagine, obviously, I've never done Afghan and Iraq, but I grew up and sort of joined just after it all calmed down. So it was sort of all of our training was catered toward that kind of environment, and all of the stories that I've heard, all of the people that I was friends with that did go and all that sort of thing, they were all obviously from brigade, all from Free Commander Brigade, sorry, and all in essentially an infantry-based role. What was it like as a like within CHF and your squadron in particular, what was your sort of routine like? Because I think there's quite a few podcasts now, there's quite a few television shows, there's a lot of information now available about what the infantry done in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, fighting patrols. If you say FOB to most civvies now, they'd go, oh, forward operating base. If you say a patrol, they'll sort of know what you're talking about. If you say IED, they know what you're talking about. They get the idea of what infantry were doing out there. But what was someone in CHF doing? You know, what was an aircraft mechanic doing, and what were the roles of the helicopters that you're working with?
So it varied. So it's funny because we're trained as CHF. If you look at like the SOP, it's supposed to be, which it kind of worked when the bootnecks took the Al-4 Peninsula. It was our aircraft that took them from ocean and dropped them off for the, and I think they were like first boots in on the ground, weren't they, the bootnecks, during the second Iraq invasion. Anyway,
I know they were on the spear, tip of the spear, when they rolled across the border from Kuwait on the Pinsgows.
You're
probably right.
I think like the first boot, I could be wrong, and there'll be someone who'll comment on this and go, oh, it was whatever, but
I don't read them.
Yeah, but I'm sure like the bootnecks were like the first, like that night they took the Al-4 Peninsula, like, or it was like the first firefight or something like that. Anyway, it was our aircraft.
Well, unsurprisingly, the Americans from the 82nd Airborne are claiming that. But you know, that's America, so you're probably right, or at least not far off it.
Yeah.
So
it's our aircraft that takes, basically ferry you guys from the ship to put you where you need to go. Now the SOP, so if we look at it from a, you know, every unit has its own SOP, its reason for doing stuff. Now in reality, there's Afghanistan, for instance, is a landlocked war, so we fight differently and we operate differently. But it's meant to be that you get in a ship, you sail across the ocean, the aircraft will take the Marines to that first point. You then the aircraft will then back and forth between the ship, so giving you ammo, food, whatever you need. And as you guys move inland, we then set up FOBs, because it's too far to go back to the ship, and it will be us, the engineers. So we'd be like one step behind you guys, looking after the FOBs. And it's not like a FOB in Afghan. It'll be literally like tents and a couple of aircraft. And then we'd set up like forward refueling points, and we'd maintain the aircraft, do what we need to do from these FOBs, and then we just kind of leapfrog along. But obviously, so that's why we have to learn patrolling, because we have to protect the FOB. We have to learn anti-ambush drills, vehicle anti-ambush drills, all that kind of stuff, all that basic soldiering, because that's what we're supposed to be doing. However, the reality of it is, you get into Afghan, you've got to say Iraq, right? So by the time I went to Iraq, we had all the major cities. We had, I went in 06. So there's still a lot of fighting going on, but we had like Basra Airport. So Basra Airport was a big hub, British hub. We'd stay there the whole time because it's got force protection, right? You've got the outer wires, you've got the inner wires, and you've got the RAF Reg doing all their patrols. And I'll get onto that because they fuck. But this is why I don't like the RAF reg. I have a gen reason for it. Like, I know they get a lot of stick, but I have literally a gen reason why I fucking hate them.
I can't wait for this, dear. I'm going to write that down so you don't forget it. Stu hates all RAF reg, full stop, yeah?
I respect the guy. I hate them in 2006 because I get a lot of shit for that.
Right, I'm going to write that down so we get that dit out, yeah? Carry on.
So in Iraq, it was great because it was like we lived on an airbase. So when, like, I don't know, I speak to my wife or whoever and I try and explain it, I go, imagine you're an aircraft mechanic at Gatwick Airport. And you go back to the terminal and there's your bed. And you wake up, you go to the aircraft, do your work. It's like that. We had big load of tents we had loads of different camps within Basra Airport, because there's loads of different units there that based themselves out of there. And we even had artillery, and I think they had some tanks, but they even had Challengers out there at one point. So we'd live in these huge tents, and it was all connected, and had your heads and everything. And then we just bus it into our office as such, and it would just be like was at Yeovil. So there'd be an office where, like, what we call the AMCO, and you'd have all your seniors that go, right, today these are the jobs. So you go, right, and you just go out, you'd have an aircraft to look after, you go out in the hard sand and just do whatever you need, whatever maintenance there was, whatever you do. So day to day, apart from being super hot, you're like, oh, it's just kind of like a normal thing. And then you get attacked, then the rockets and mortars come in, the alarms are going off, and that happened like several times a day. And so that's when you're like, oh yeah, actually we're not that safe, although you do, because you've got blast walls and things like that. And then you have things where they'll go, right, we've got intel that they're going to try and lift someone off the camp. So right, and that's normally anyway, you have body armor is got to be like, I don't know, within an arm's reach, and then there'd be a different level you've got to wear it the whole time, and then there's a level where you've got to wear it and have your weapon, because we'd put our weapons at work in the, you know, we have a shake on there. But then when they say they're going to lift someone, because we had a load of local workers working there and they're dodgy as fuck. So it was like, right, so you have to have your weapon on. So you're trying to, like, I don't know, take a shit in a port-a-loo. It's like 50 degree heat. You're wearing body armor and you've got your SA-80. And then when you close the door and put, there's fucking nowhere to put the shit. There's like piss on the floor. So yeah, so it's, I can't moan because there's lads out in the field, like, properly in shit conditions. So we had it good compared to the other lads and lasses out in the actual field. But yeah, our thing was basically just getting mortared and rocketed, like, because we were a big target at Basra. And I think on my second tour we were like the most attacked airfield since like World War II or something. Like, we had like, in my like 4 months there, we had something like 350 or 360 attacks. And we had this splat map of a thing which is covered, you know. So you have a few, you know, there you do, so a lot of them will go over, but you do have a few kind of close calls, but you kind of get used to it. It's weird, like, looking back on it, it was kind of like a weird existence, you know. You just out in this desert and you're just getting mortared and rocketed, and you just then you go, all right, cool, that aircraft needs to go up. So what the aircraft did, so in Iraq, we had an ISTAR, so that's intelligence, surveillance, target acquisition and reconnaissance. That was our, we were an ISTAR asset. So the Mark IVs were green and they had a big, like, they had nothing in the back. It was just a troop carrier. So we had to fit cameras to them and like a console. So we did that out there. And then they would fly really high so no one could hear at night, so you couldn't hear the rotors. And they would just watch for when they rocketed us.
And try, so go, and right, pick up
flash
where
there,
they were.
Ping it with a laser, and they do a couple of things. So one, they could just ping it with a laser and blow up that launch site, or what they would normally
send
do.
Send Apache up to smash it from like 5
yeah,
miles
so
away.
At the time, it was fast air doing it. Yeah. And it's cool because we watch all the footage, but what they would do is they would more than likely go, right, okay, there's a thing, and we'd see all the footage, and they'd follow like the car back to wherever it's going. It'll go in a house and they'll go, oh, this is a known thing, yeah, cool, and then they'll just paint it with a laser and 2,000-pound bomb will come in
the house,
flatten it, yeah. So that's pretty awesome. So that's what we did in Iraq. And then Afghan, much of the same. Afghan for me was, it sounds about, Afghan was an easier tour for me. We were out in Can. We spent our time between aircraft. I say cabs. If I say cabs, a cab is an aircraft.
Yeah.
So we had cabs at the main. Our main posting was Kandahar, but we had a couple of cabs down in Bastion. So the flight, which is like what you guys would call a platoon or a squadron, so the flight would split up and we'd send X amount of lads down to Camp Bastion for a week, and we just rotate through and we'd all do that. And then we had a two aircraft supporting TF-42, which is the SF attachment. So we had lads rotate through there because they had their own little compound with the aircraft in, so they were like separate. So we were more general duties, I'd say, moving troops around and supporting SF. But we only got attacked like once or twice a week. So it's, for me, it's, Afghan was like a bloody, if anyone's been at Kandahar back then, it was like a holiday camp. A big boardwalk, they had Tim Hortons, they had a Burger King. Like it was, yeah, I couldn't complain really. That was easy. That was an easy tour for me. But it's funny because the guys on the ground, that's obviously like, from what I've heard, worse than. So it feels weird when I go, oh, Afghan's easy, but I'm like, yeah, well, I was at Kandahar and Camp Bastion, which at the time Bastion didn't get hit when I was there, and Kandahar was like twice a week. So yeah, was all right really, Kandahar, but Iraq was, that was gnarly. That was worse. Pretty heavy. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So while we were on Afghanistan, obviously it's very difficult. It's still a bit of a touchy subject, and you know, there's always the phrase of don't argue tactics, but why do you think, or how would you have done the withdrawal from Afghan differently? You know, why did we leave from a very strategic and tactically terrible position, but kind of politically high position of Kabul, when we had places like Kandahar, which we could have done a tactical retreat from? A lot safer, if you like. What's your take on it as a person that done tours in those places?
That's weird. So if I, and this is just my opinion, and you know, people might go, well, it's just an engineer, and that's fine. But I and this is nothing against anyone that served. So in Iraq, I think Iraq was an illegal war. We shouldn't have been. At the time, I was like, yeah, if I can. But looking back now, I'm older and wiser. I don't think we should have gone to Iraq. And that may ruffle some feathers. I think it was an illegal war. I think Tony Blair should be done as a war criminal. That's just my opinion.
I don't think many people would disagree with you, to be honest.
We won't go into it, but when you look at it, it's like, really? Like, we did that for... So, yeah, and I think we've made it a worse place. And then you look at, like, ISIS and all these other, like, worst organisations that have come out of the ashes of those places. So we've obviously done it. We shouldn't have been there. Afghan, I actually think, made more sense than Iraq. And naively, I feel like we probably did some good there. You know, I think... Well, ultimately, who are we to say how people live? You know, who are we to police the world? But if you look at what pisses me off is I've read something the other day, and it said that, and I'm not surprised, but it said like the Taliban have stopped girls over the age of, I don't know, 6 or 8 from education. And when you see shit like that, I'm like, it's gone back to the Middle Ages. And I think having it, because we went in there, and it wasn't just a quick 5-minute job. It ended up being I actually think because we were in there for so long, we almost owed them a debt that we should have just stayed there and continued to have a presence there to keep the peace as such. I think when we went in, we've been there. We've gone too far just to go.
Right, we're done now. Yeah.
I mean... You know, it just feels like we've gone in there, we've made all these promises, we've done some good, we've done some bad, and then we've gone see you later. And I feel like it's our debt to them that we should have stayed there and tried to keep the peace for however long that is.
Yeah.
Because the Taliban should never have got back in power. And we've just handed it on a plane. You look at how, I mean, Biden, that man is in charge of, like, I don't care what political party you sit on, but that man is not fit for office.
Old Sleepy Joe.
I mean, it's just embarrassing. But then, you know, what they say, you go woke, you go broke. So I think we should have stayed there. I think we owed it to the people. I think we're just wrong to pull out, really. It just seems like a dick move to me.
It's an extremely complicated question that I'll put you on the spot just to get your opinion of.
That's fine.
I don't think there is an answer. And I think anyone with two sort of brain cells between their ears would agree with your opinion in their aspect, whether that meant that when we were there, we should have gone longer or we should have left early or whatever. You know, it's the same sort of thing. I think it's difficult because a lot of people link or they group Afghanistan and Iraq, and they always say Afghan and Iraq. And tactically, they were completely different conflicts.
Completely.
But one
different
thing,
people, different fighting. I mean, Iraq was urban. You've got several, you know, you've got the diehard kind of loyalist to Saddam. Then you've just got the, and you know what? When I was out there, and my mate said it, and I was like, "Fucking right, he's right." He said, "Imagine if someone invaded your country, like, because basically we're getting rocketed." And he goes, "I don't blame them for that." He was like, "I'd do the same if I was on their shoes. I'd be rocketing this base." And I was like, "Yeah, so would I." Yeah. You know, who are we to go over there? But you know, you look at Africa. We're never gonna win that fight. And that's not saying that we didn't have a good military and the best military in the world. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying they've got time, and that's, they've said that, haven't they? We'll just wait till they leave, because one day they will. And guess what we did?
It's mega hard to fight a counterinsurgency as it is. You know, one of the only successful campaigns against a counterinsurgency was former Rhodesia did, so Zimbabwe now, with the Zela scouts and stuff in Mozambique and things like that. And all right, some of the tactics are still used today for counterinsurgency and taught today, but the majority of tactics are against the Geneva Convention and are war crimes. So it's like, how do you beat a counterinsurgency with war crimes? It's like, you know, and yeah, so lastly, before we move off of this, I just wanted to mention about the Iraq thing as well being an illegal war. I was listening to a podcast with Joe Rogan and Jack Carr, the author, the other day, and he agreed with you. He said the same point, you know, it was an illegal war. And the intelligence they used to launch a full-scale invasion of a first world country, which is what it was, arguably not anymore, but it was at the time, was less than what was required 3 years later to organize a strike package. So to organize a strike package, in the words of Jack Carr, who was a Naval SEAL officer, he needed human in, he needed digital in, and a collaborating intelligence, whether that was from human or digital or, you know, some sort of other in. So three different types of intelligence. We invaded a country, so that's Britain, that their allies and US led, invaded a whole country on one form of it, you know, which turned out to be false. So you can decide whether it's illegal or not, but that's the facts.
You need to watch, if you haven't seen it, there's a film called, I think it's called Official Secrets, with Keira Knightley, and it's a true story. And Keira Knightley plays this whistleblower in like MI5 or MI6. And it goes into basically the build up to the invasion, and basically because everyone voted against it. And then America were asking MI5 or MI6 to get dirt on these. They're basically, have you got dirt on these people? Because we will need it to then get them to strong arm and say, yeah, actually, we'll go to war. And that's what they did. You know, it's mental. But it is. I mean, I get it. Right. You got, you know, 9/11, horrendous tragedy. But the people from like Saudi and Yemen, right? And then we go to war with Iraq and Africa. It's just, I don't know. It's just, it's mental.
I think it all gets confused. The timeline's hard to track, and I've had far too much wine to try and space it all out.
Do you want to know about the Raff Reg?
Yes, that was my next thing. So why does Stu from Lakota Outdoors, as a policy, hate all RAF regiment?
Past and present. I hate's a strong word. In Iraq, we kept getting hit every day. Like, it was a joke. I think it was like 10 a.m. we'd get hit. And it was like going on for, like, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks. And we're like, what the fuck's going on? And we have like the update and all that. And then one day it stopped. And it just went back to sporadic times or whatever. And we had the intelligence back and they went, yeah, the reason we were being hit was our patrols, which was the RAF Reg, were going out. And they're going out at the same time every morning, doing the same route and coming back at the same time. So they'd get in the gate from the morning patrol at half nine. And they'd go, right, cool, set the times half an hour, see you later. And because they didn't stagger the patrols, which is like a day one. I'm not infantry, and I know that. You stagger your patrol time. So they're obviously just watching the gate and go, yeah, they're back, right, let's do it. And so, like, when you're sitting there getting rocketed at the same time and you're thinking, and then you hear that, you go, fuck. And now, there might have been a reason that they didn't stagger their patrols. It might not have been down to the guys on the ground and the higher-ups, but it just put, and this was, I don't know, back in the day where, you know, now you go on social media and it's like, oh, this regiment's that regiment that, and the RAF get a load of, RAF Reg get a load of stick. But we didn't know about any of that back then. We were just like...
You were too busy watching them shoot their own body armour and stuff, weren't you?
Exactly. That's mental as well. But I know two lads that serve in RAF Reg, and to be fair, they're good guys. They're good lads. So it's hard to say I hate, but it just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know a couple. Controls, mate. I know a couple, and one of which is a sniper. He, or a former sniper, he does a bushcraft channel and stuff. You might have seen his stuff, East Anglia Bushcraft, or East Anglia Bushcraft,
yeah.
Craig. And he's a great bloke, and he'd done some half-decent tours by the sound of it, you know, and he'd done more than I did. And he was RAF Reg, you know, but it's weird that in his bio he puts British, you know, sniper veteran rather than RAF Reg. I don't blame him. I 100% do not blame him.
Yeah. I always, you know, I love the inter-service banter, and like especially Matt Lowe's bootneck banter. I mean, that's we live for it. But I genuinely don't care what, I don't look down or up at anyone. I think I respect anyone that's, I will take the piss out of you, but deep down, anyone that serves, and today you have my full respect. Like, I don't care what job you do. Like, because it's like you go on Instagram now, and quite rightly, there's people that are like, you know, ex special forces, and they're, you know, people are like hero worship. And I get that. Like Christian Craighead, like, what an absolute, like, that man is like a superhero, right?
Yeah.
So I get it.
Obi-Wan Nairobi.
Yeah. But then it's like on Instagram, you look at it and like, unless you've served in like three regiments, like, no one wants to know. And that's fine. Like, what I did is not Gucci. It's not sexy. It's like, oh, you turned spanners, right? Yeah, that's all I did. But it's when civvies kind of look down on like the trades and go, oh, well, you're in the army, but you weren't a para, or you were in the Navy and you weren't a Marine. Like, I don't care. And it's like, yeah, that's fine, but you did nothing.
Yeah,
you're a civvy, like, you can't, you know. And then and it's almost like people will write off your services of, oh well, yeah, but you didn't, but you were just doing this. It's like, you actually don't know, you have no clue what I went through. So that's the only thing that annoys me. I don't want anyone to be like, whoa, you fix aircraft. I'm not saying that at all. I get it. But it's when people kind of dismiss others on based on what regiment they're in or what job they did. I just think, like, fair enough if you were like power or whatever, yeah, cool, like, give me shit. But like, if you didn't serve and you didn't go out there and you're a civvy, then it's like, pipe down.
I think it's really difficult. Like, I fully empathize with that because it's similar when I don't openly say to people, oh yeah, I was a bootneck, but when people ask, obviously I go on full send and they have to sit and listen because they've asked. And all my best training dits come out and everything. But, you know, as soon as then the follow-up question is always, oh, did you go to Afghan?
Yeah.
And I go, well, no, I didn't, you know. And for a long time, that wound me up that I never did. You know, it was almost like that extra credibility. And that will still always be part of it. You know, I never got to test myself.
It's just timing, though, mate. That's just, it's not like you went, I don't want to go, see you later. It's purely timing. I know people... I knew an ex-bootneck that he didn't go away, but it's like, it's not his fault. He just, not that he joined late, but he was just a bit younger. And like when I joined, it was early 2000s. When he joined, it was past the, you know, a couple of years ago. Yeah. So it's like, well, mate, like, yeah, you've not done Afghan Iraq. Like you were, it's just timing. I know my cousin, he's in the Army Air Corps and you know, and he's finally got a medal and he just won't shut up about it. Marley, does it count? Dunno, bit of banter there. But he's always like, God, I need a medal before I leave, and I'm like, mate, like, I get but
he'll have two now, won't he, with the Jubilee one, both of which he shouldn't wear, but you know, who am I?
So I'm like, it's just a fucking coin on your chest, you know what I mean? Unless you've got like, I don't know, Victoria Cross, something like, yeah, full respect, but
yeah, if you've got a full rack, like, as you say, Craig Craighead Christhead, or whatever it is. His name's mental, but he's an absolute legend. Yeah, it's one of those that, you know, people that don't know will always look down on separate things. But then on the same side, you know, just because you chose to join a service, whether that be, you know, military or civilian service in terms of thingy, doesn't make you better than a bloke that decided to be a scaffolder.
Exactly. That's another good point. It's funny because, and that's why I dropped the veteran thing off Lakota, because I don't think because there was like some of it, I think it's cool, like, yeah, I get it, but there was like veteran owned or veteran operated, and I did have that for a long time, and I dropped it because I was like, to me it doesn't. Now there's some brands like ex-UKSF, but yeah, if I was ex-SF, I'd be banging out all over that. But
yeah, like Through Dark. I'm like, yeah,
exactly.
Fair one.
Yeah,
you're literally the real deal, tier one alley operators. Yeah, fair one.
But I'm like, yeah, I'm ex-forces, but I fix helicopters. Like, it's not cool, so I'm going to drop it. And also, I was like, it doesn't make me any better than anyone else. And you know, there'd be so many dickheads that serve. It's like any job. You go into a job, but then again, I think people that don't know will look and go, oh yeah, but they served. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't mean he's a righteous person. Like, he can still be a dickhead. I'm also like, if people didn't serve, I don't care. Like,
no,
I almost go, you did the right thing. Like, so Eddie. So he was like, he used to play like professional football when he was younger, finished up doing that, and he wanted to be a PTI in the Marines. And it was, again, at the height of the war, and his dad said, don't do it. And he said to me, like, oh, kind of wish, you know, I always wish. And I was like, mate, what you've done as a stuntman, like, he told me like what you have to go through. I haven't been through Limpston, but I was like, mate, that seems like fucking terrifying compared to like 30 miler, like the stuff that he's done, not taking anything away from you, but the stuff he did to be a stuntman is crazy. So I was like, mate, it's not like you got anything to prove. Like,
I think that's, you know, it, I mean? Mate, and we use it, we obviously, you know, in our bio, it's former Warming Commando and firefighter and stuff, and it's,
yeah, but that's your brand.
It's my branding yeah, and it's part of the ethos, and it helps explain the ethos. So I get how you'd want to take it. I've got foxes outside of my windows open.
They're screaming.
Yeah, screaming away.
Like, that's crazy, isn't it? We had it last summer. I thought it was like some woman was being murdered.
I wonder if it'll pick up on this podcast. It's like, we're doing it in nature. Well, actually, people can't see, but I managed to somehow set my background.
Nick, I was going to say, that's a cool picture.
Under the sea. Yeah, it's
did you take a picture of that? Is that your picture? Or is that? Oh no, it's a
turn. No, mate. No. I pressed something by accident, and now I can't turn it off. In classic boatneck fashion, I'm now under the sea. I had a podcast with another boatneck earlier this afternoon, Civvy to Commando, one of the fitness mentoring guys, and literally we're laughing for 20 minutes because I couldn't figure out how to take it off. But yeah, mate, it's one of those things. If it's a good thing to have, it's
I think if it fits your brand, like your brand, it makes sense. But for me, I was like, we're an outdoor thing. Do you know what I mean? Like on my website, if you go on like about us, we do mention military veterans because it gives a little bit of kudos, like to, and that's more to say like we've dealt with shitty situations, so we can go out in the mountains and take pictures. But I didn't feel like putting it on the page because I didn't want, and also I didn't want like people to go, oh, it's veterans, so I've got to like it, or I don't know. I just was like, I almost wanted to step away a little bit about that. I mean, it's we're always going to have a little bit of that. It's in our DNA, like, and I like that, but I didn't want to be overly veteran. Not that I'm against that. I just, the brand for me, I like, what does it stand on its own? I was like, we're not really about the military. We are about the outdoors. So I just didn't think it fit it. And I just wanted to, you know, move away from that a little bit.
It makes perfect sense. Like we as a brand at GTC, you know, there's a reason why it's called Gibraltar Training Company and it's not Commando Training Company or it's not Royal Marine Training Company, you know, and we've got various versions of the logo already. You know, only one is vaguely tactical, and that's the one that's got a fire axe and a Fairburn Sykes Commander with dagger cross, you know, the OGR go-to. But, you know, the hat that I'm wearing that people can't see at the moment is a silhouette of the Gibraltar Rock with our wording on it and stuff. And it's like, we've got a mixture because, like you were saying about that, you know, we're not a brand that's just for services. You know, we're a brand that is born out of service, yes. Agree. It's tested operationally. Yes, that's what we do. However, we are for anyone that believes in our ethos, you know, integrity, hard work, and sacrifice and service. That sacrifice and service doesn't have to be for the Queen, God rest her soul. But
it's not there yet.
you just saluted. no one can see. Like it's an audio.
Never happened.
so yeah, it. You know, it's for anyone, whether that's sacrificing for your family, for yourself in self-improvement, for friends, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter as long as you're hitting that ethos. So I fully get that, mate. That makes sense. So you've brought Lakota. It's developed into what it is. You've used your basis and your know-how from the outdoors, born through the forces, you know. So what is the now, you know, what are you really trying to push with Lakota Outdoors and what's the next sort of targets in the coming weeks and months and years for it?
So what, and like we've spoken about this when we were obviously talking about working together. So what we're trying to do now is just get some traction and try and just to be out there, which is why we've got the website up to just showcase what we can do. And it's, you know, we're reaching out to brands are reaching out to us, and it's trying to build up that portfolio. So it's kind of like, you know, we start with certain brands and we're hoping that leads to bigger things. We've got some cons through Eddie. I mean, he's worked with major brands and, you know, so he's got a lot of contacts in that world, and there's potentially an outdoor brand, which I can't mention, that his brother-in-law's now like their new kind of campaign manager. So potentially, like we spoke to them and they're going to see if the brand will go for it. There's a project coming up this summer where we're making some content for a brand releasing a new product, which will be that's paid work. And that's the goal, is to kind of get to where we work with the big brands, and, you know, we're charging money and, you know, making a little bit on the side to then pays for our trips away. So that's, we just want to grow it, basically. That's kind of where we are. Also, there's a goal next year. I spoke to Eddie. Well, Eddie mentioned it. I was like, that's a good idea. We want to, there's a certain mountain that we want to climb next year, but we've got to learn some skills and, you know, do some logistics. Not Everest, but it's a, it is a broad and it's quite a decent climb. So from a adventure thing, that's what fuels us, is you know, and each month we're like, right, where are we going to go next? You know, so we kind of pick a, it's like Lakes, Wales, I think we'll do Peak District next, and it's just like, right, we'll go here, we can get content for the brands we're working with and have a great time. So it's number one goal is we still got to be fun and do what we've got to be passionate about it, but it's growing and working with, we want to work with like big brands. That's the aim, that's the ultimate goal. But it's small steps, as you're aware.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, because we're lucky in the UK, you know, we've got connections or the birthplace of some incredible outdoor brands. You know, yep. Montaigne are UK based, or they were. Rab, even Osprey's got a big connection. Snugpack, Buffalo, you know, there's so many out there that want to stay British and want to use British content. So there's a huge space there. And we're both watch pests and are big fans of night watches as well. And they're investing in. There you go. Yeah. You're just showing off because I've got my Longines on today. That's all it is.
That's nice though.
So yeah, it's really exciting, mate. And obviously, I've been chatting to you for, as I say, you know, a few months, probably part of a year now. I've seen the transition from the Stag's Head and, you know, being more of an outdoor, almost a bit more light and fluffy and more of an outdoor team, if you like. That was just a bunch of people saying go outdoors, to what it is now. And there's a remarkable change, and you can just flick through the Instagram, which we'll go through in a minute, so people can find it. And it's aesthetically solid boot neck ticking in again. You know, I should have a podcast. You can speak really well. What a joke. That word, it looks fantastic, you know, and you can see that it's changed, and you've got Eddie, you've got Ish, you've got yourself, and then you've got a couple more that are coming up that are just putting out some incredible content. I'm flicking through it now, and it's all showroom quality. It's awesome. So, you know, if you like the outdoors, it's all worth a like, especially the ones with these blue and black flannels. They look lovely.
Yeah. Who makes them?
Some weirdo. awesome, mate. Well, thank you very much, Stu. Before we let you escape, and so you can go hate on some more Raff Reg on Facebook, just give us a quick rundown of your socials, of your website, so that people can, you know, the three people that listen to this can have a little Google of who you
are. My mum, my dad.
No, my dad don't love me. He won't listen. It'll be me and you and my mum.
Perfect. Sounds like a party. Yeah, so Lakota_outdoors for Instagram, and then Lakota-outdoors.com, I think it is, for the website. But we've linked it with the Instagram. We're not on Facebook. So it's just in Instagram. Like, if you want to get in contact, just slide into the DMs on Instagram or email us on the website, and that goes through to the email. So check it out. Check out all the other people I tag in the photos as well.
Yeah, you've got
High Deep Mountain High, Bearded Shooter, Eddie Playmaker,
Harry
Threaders.
I think that's all the latest ones.
Yeah.
But there is
There is more. I'll normally tag who goes away with us that weekend on the photos. But yeah, there's a lot of good guys there. And check out Sam Trelaw, because he makes his photos.
Yeah, he's got a cracker. Yeah, he's done some stuff for us as well. He's really good. Yeah, we'll make sure we put the links to all your stuff anyway in the end of the description. But thank you very much for coming on, Stu. Great guest. We've found a lot out about what Matlows do, and it's always fun. Thank you very much for coming on, mate, and we'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, PJ. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the GTC podcast. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day. Don't forget to head over to our Instagram at GTC Podcast. Thanks again. Stay wavy.